and Americans for the Arts.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Today we're going to hear Florida This Week, and we're also going to hear the end of today's Democracy Now!, the interview with Soraya Shamali and Medea Benjamin, who were being interviewed by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! When we stopped the program just before 10 o'clock. We want to thank some people. Suzanne House from Tampa, thanks for your ongoing support for WMNF. And she says thanks to John Butts for walking your walk and talking your talk. Thanks to Anonymous in Tampa, $50 contribution in memory of Eve. And thanks to Anonymous in Bradenton, who made a $25 contribution. Anonymous, thank you very much. We came up about 11 calls short on the sustainable living and health program, and we came up about 13 calls short on Democracy Now! So we're going to try to raise that money, but let's listen to a little bit of Democracy Now! Right now. Sean, Democracy Now! Almost made its goal last Thursday within a call or two. Then on Friday, not so much, and today it didn't reach its goal. But we're going to continue to hear Democracy Now! Hopefully people will call in.
Yeah, that would be great, you know, to help keep Democracy Now! On pace. We'd hate to go 0-3 here with Democracy Now! We do need your support, 813-238-8001. The possible death of a journalist who is based in America. He's a Saudi journalist, but based in America. This is a huge, huge international story with one of the U.S.'s most controversial and closest allies.
Yeah.
And a lot of
maybe
people
murdered a journalist.
Exactly.
Maybe.
And a lot of people are questioning whether, you know, why is the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia so close? And why is it that Saudi Arabia can seemingly do no wrong? Well, what if it murders a journalist? Is that crossing a line? Well, we're going to find out in this segment.
In a few minutes. Let's go to Hear Democracy Now! Right now. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And we're going to pick up with Amy interviewing Medea Benjamin again, and Soraya Shamali, who is the author of Rage Becomes Her. And they were talking about the protests against the Kavanaugh confirmation over the weekend. Let's pick up with more Democracy Now! Right here on WMNF in Tampa.
So to call us a mob is such a level of disrespect. There is a new movement in this country that the Me Too movement has gone further and deeper, and now giving voice to people who just feel that they need to be heard. And the fact that they demanded that their senators listen to them, whether it was in the elevators, in the hallways, in the halls, or the kind of speakouts that were happening outdoors as well. This is unprecedented. And I hope that it is deep enough that it is forming a strong, cohesive movement among people that will resonate through this country and change the culture of our country, the way that young people are brought up, the way that parents teach their children to respect and respect for women and men. So hopefully this will have a real cultural shift.
This is Me Too founder Tarana Burke speaking on NBC's Meet the Press Sunday.
We have set a precedent in this country of not believing, of thinking that women in particular are lying when they come forward with these allegations, when people come forward with these allegations. So the mantra Believe Survivors is about, can we start with the premise that people do not often lie about the pain and the trauma of sexual violence? If we start with that premise, that if you believe that it's true, then you can have an investigation. You can have an interrogation of the facts and that kind of thing. This is not to say believe people blanket and don't investigate and don't do anything else besides believe them. Mm.
Soraya Shamali, can you respond to Tarana Burke, who in 2006 coined that term, Me Too, that Alyssa Milano, the actress, then picked up on that day that the Harvey Weinstein article was first written about him attacking so many women and went to sleep, and the response to her saying, if something's happened to you, please respond with Me Too, and she was just inundated.
Yes, I mean, I think that it's very clear that while people are talking about the presumption of innocence, they're not talking about the presumption of innocence for survivors and people who've been assaulted. And, you can't say that Dr. Christine Blasey Ford was confused or lying, unless you presume that she is guilty of lying or not knowing what she's talking about. And the whole sham of the investigation and the course of this confirmation, I think, attests to the real fear with Me Too, which is not, as the president said, that women will lie and destroy the lives of men, but that women are telling the truth. And if women are telling the truth, then it's not just an indictment of a few bad apples, but an indictment of the entire system, an indictment of the treatment of survivors and of women by men with power, particularly on the right. And so this idea that people are lying, which is absurd on the face of it, because no one has anything to gain ultimately by coming forward with these stories. I mean, look at the outcome of this. Dr. Ford is hiding because of violent threats, and Brett Kavanaugh is about to become a Supreme Court justice.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, never again should anybody hear that this is ruining a man's life, that boys are in danger. And in this case, obviously, it's young white boys, because that's really the only way you could interpret what the president said.
You write in your book, Soraya, that rage is hard for women to express. And I was wondering if you can talk about that and also Senator McConnell's characterization of the mobs.
Well, you know, I think that it's useful for McConnell to talk about a mob. These are citizens. They're articulating their needs and they're defending their rights. They happen mainly to be women, which means that they're associated with unhinged emotion. And you can see that in multiple forms of commentary coming from his party. But I think that we all understand, certainly as women, that anger and the expression of anger comes with penalties for women. We're socialized to put others first, to restrain our expressions of negative emotions because it causes discomfort. And even as little girls are rewarded for being nice and pleasing, not for being assertive or aggressive, neither of which implies that we're angry, by the way. It's just that the assertiveness and aggression and anger are not separated in the behavior and responses to girls and women. So I think that what we're seeing now in this explosion of women's feeling is clearly a pent-up need to be listened to and believed. It's a demand that this stop, that the gaslighting stop, that the doubting stop, and that the disregard for our rights as citizens come to an end.
You wrote about Kavanaugh's rage versus Blasey Ford in the testimony.
Yes. Well, she was so composed and demure, and actually she was deferential, right? She went out of her way to try and put others at ease, which I think is fairly common for women. In her situation, certainly knowing that, and she not only was a witness, but an expert witness. So she was testifying, but she also has studied this her entire life. She knows what these dynamics look like. I would say that the saddest part, actually, of her whole testimony to me was when she used the word collegiality, because it showed that she really considered that these people that she was appealing to, and on the right, of course, it was all men, three of whom had been participants in the Anita Hill Judge Clarence Thomas hearings, that they considered her a peer, that they would treat her with mutual respect, that they would acknowledge her professional expertise. And that is simply not true. She could not make that assumption. And that comes as a rude shock to girls and women all the time, that we believe that we are functioning as equals with equal dignity and with the knowledge that we have accrued some expertise. And then we're sort of slapped in the face with the information that our male peers do not feel that way at all. Kavanaugh, on the other hand, came in roaring and indignant and petulant, and his emotionality overwhelmed everything else in the room. And he could do that because in our culture, there is an essential core of rationality that is associated with being a man. It actually didn't degrade the idea that he could think clearly. Whereas if you're a woman, You don't have that assumption. You can't. People don't presume that about you. You are all emotionality, and if by chance you think clearly, that's sort of a layered on top of this feelings orientation that we're supposed to naturally have as women, which is of course nonsense. Men are no more rational or logical than women are, and women are no more unhinged and emotional than men. That was very clear from the confirmation hearings.
So a lot of the discussion has been about the midterm elections, and this has galvanized the right, many Republicans are saying. Interestingly, shortly after Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Supreme Court, Republican Congressman Steve King tweeted a photo of a sleeping infant and said, quote, soon babies like this little angel will be protected in the womb by law. Of course, referring to the overturning of Roe v. Wade. As we wrap up, since you've just come from this book tour around the country, how people are continuing to organize, or do you think this stops women in their tracks?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, very clearly, I think that maybe one of the most formidable confrontations of what we have been living with is about to come. I think that This is not stopping anything in its tracks. If we're looking at a 12-hour clock, we're probably at second three or four, I would say. I mean, the truth is that a lot of people would like Me Too, and any suggestions that Me Too has failed or come to an end to go away. And it's really not an end; it's a beginning. This is not a movement that is about to come to a close or that it's looking back. It really is an incredibly sustained and committed challenge to these systemic abuses.
Soraya Chomali, want to thank you for being with us. Rage Becomes Her, The Power of Women's Anger is Soraya's new book. Medea Benjamin, we're asking you to stay with us as we turn to a very different story right now. What has happened to Jamal Khashoggi? He walks into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey. He's a columnist for The Washington Post, and he never comes out, as far as anyone knows. He's believed to be dead. What happened? Stay with us.
And we're going to hear that. We're going to hear that segment of Democracy Now. The U.S.-Saudi relationship, a really important topic, almost never discussed on mainstream media here in the U.S. It is real. It is something that's going on. And in many parts of the world, very controversial. So we're going to hear that next on WMNF in Tampa. Well, I'm Rob Lori, host of Radioactivity. Sean Canan is here, the assistant news director. We're going to try to raise, in this hour, we're going to try to raise $3,000. And we've got a challenge. We've got somebody who's donated $1,000. If we can get 10 $100 contributions in the next few minutes, we will get an extra $1,000. Your donation will be matched. Thanks a lot for tuning in to WMNF. We are going to hear Florida this week from this past Friday night. Thanks to Anonymous in Sarasota, made a $35 contribution. The gift is in fond memory of Eve and to celebrate the Sustainable Living Program, both of which are inspirational. Thank you, Anonymous, for that nice contribution. 813-238-8001 is our phone number here at WMNF, trying to raise enough money to keep WMNF going for the next 4 months. Sean Canan and I are going to try to raise that $3,000. We are going to go back to Democracy Now! In about 2 minutes. Sean, we've got the challenge on. That is that if we get 10 $100 contributions in the next half hour or so, we will get an extra $1,000. That'll be a big part of fundraising here at WMNF. So you can double your money when you call in 813-238-8001.
Yeah, can we count on you for a $100 donation? We'd really like to hear from you right now. If you support Radioactivity or Democracy Now!, 813-238-8001. You listen to Democracy Now! And Radioactivity because you expect hard-hitting news. Well, what about the coverage you're getting right now about the Me Too movement, about Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation, and about this Saudi journalist who is presumed dead inside the Saudi consulate in Turkey? If this is the kind of news that you feel that you need to have in your life, that you want to be informed about, We'd like to hear from you. 813-238-8001. Give us a call, or you can make a donation online, WMNF.org.
And just an update, Tropical Storm Michael has been strengthened to a Category 1 hurricane, so we're going to have more about that on the top of the hour. Sean's going to have some breaking news about that in the next hour, so stick around. But it is not going to hit the Tampa Bay area. It's going to hit the Florida Panhandle. Thanks to Anonymous, who has just donated $70 online, taking tickets to the Queen of Soul tribute at the Palladium on October 28th. That's a Sunday night show at the Palladium where we do a tribute to Aretha Franklin with some local bands. Sean, we're going to go back to Democracy Now! In just about a minute. We will hear Florida This Week in a few minutes. So please call us up at 813-238-8001 and perhaps the most undercovered story, the U.S.-Saudi relationship. That's the topic of the next segment of Democracy Now! You're not going to hear this on any other radio station. Please keep this program, Democracy Now!, on the air with your contribution to WMNF, 813-238-8001.
You know, I hate to say it, but almost every day, fuel tankers from Tampa fly over to the Mideast and refuel Saudi jets as they bomb Yemen. I mean, this is a story that really has local implications, but it also has global implications. The U.S.-Saudi alliance and what's happening in Yemen and in some other, and human rights abuses in Saudi Arabia. It's really an important issue that, as Rob has mentioned, is not covered except on 88.5. So give us a call, 813-238-8001.
This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Fears are growing over the fate of missing Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who Turkish officials say they believe was murdered in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, last week. Khashoggi was a columnist for the Washington Post. He's been living in self-imposed exile in the United States. He entered the Saudi consulate in Turkey seeking a document he needed to get married and has not been seen since. The Washington Post reports a Turkish investigation has revealed a group of about 15 Saudi men traveled to Istanbul to kill Khashoggi as he visited the consulate. Saudi officials have denied the report and say they don't know the journalist's whereabouts. In an interview with Bloomberg last week, the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, said the Saudis were very keen to know what happened to Khashoggi and would allow Turkish officials to enter the Saudi consulate and search the premises. But when he was pressed about whether Khashoggi faces charges in Saudi Arabia, he evaded the question. Khashoggi is a well-known critic of the Saudi regime. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut tweeted Sunday, if this is true that the Saudis lured a U.S. resident into their consulate and murdered him, it should represent a fundamental break in our relationship with Saudi Arabia, unquote. Well, last week, the Washington Post printed a blank column in support of Khashoggi. It was titled, A Missing Vote, with just his byline. A Missing Voice, it was the headline. Our next guest is Mehdi Hassan, who interviewed Jamal Khashoggi in Washington, D.C. earlier this year.
Your crown prince to Putin, to Iran's supreme leader, you've said he's creating, quote, an interesting form of dictatorship. How so?
I still see him as a reformer, but he is gathering all power within his hand. And it would be much better for him to allow a breathing space for critic, for Saudi intellectuals, Saudi writers, Saudi media to debate the most important needed transformation going in the country. What he is doing, I called for and I got fired for when I was an editor of a newspaper, allowing women to drive or for women to be empowered or to limit the power of the religious establishment. I demanded that, and he is doing the right things. But it is an important transformation that requires all of us to contribute to it, to discuss it, and no one should be jailed.
We go now to Washington, D.C., where we are joined by Mehdi Hassan, who is interviewing Jamal Khashoggi. Mehdi is a columnist for The Intercept, host of their Deconstructed podcast. He is the host of Upfront at Al Jazeera English, where Jamal was speaking. Also with us, Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, who knew Khashoggi and is the author of Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Mehdi, talk about the latest news and what we understand at this point has happened to Jamal Khashoggi.
So over the weekend, Amy, we had Turkish government officials and police officers and advisors to Erdogan, the president, leaking and, stating to the media that this Saudi kill team, this assassination team, came from Saudi Arabia, 15 of them allegedly, to the consulate where Jamal Khashoggi entered last Tuesday to get this documentation for his marriage with his fiancée waiting outside, and allegedly killed him inside the consulate. There's reports that his body may have been cut up and taken out of the embassy in boxes in a car. It's horrific stuff that we're hearing about. The Saudis deny all of this, of course, although their denial isn't worth much. And interestingly, the consulate took a group of, I think, Reuters journalists over the weekend around the consulate, the sixth floors, opening the doors of closets very ostentatiously to show that he's not in the building. He's not here. He left. And yet, funnily enough, their CCTV wasn't working, apparently, the day he came in. So they've got no video footage of him leaving. How convenient, Amy. I mean, look, the Saudis are involved in the disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi. If, God forbid, he's dead, as is looking very likely, it's been several days now with no proof of life. This is a horrific escalation in the Crown Prince's campaign to silence dissent, to silence any criticism, even the mildest of criticism, from Saudis at home or abroad. It's deeply worrying, deeply concerning, and the world shouldn't sit silently by, although I suspect they will.
Mehdi Hassan, talk about who Jamal Khashoggi, I don't even know whether to say is or was.
Yeah. He was one of the most prominent Saudi voices, journalists. Everyone in the Western media knew him. He was an access point for the Saudi royal family for a long time. He was an advisor to Saudi royals like Turki bin Faisal, who was ambassador to the U.S., former Saudi intelligence chief. He was advisor to Walid bin Talal, a very prominent, wealthy Saudi businessman and prince. He had appeared on many TV shows, not just mine, was well known here in Washington, D.C., where he moved in 2017 when he felt that the new crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, wasn't letting him speak freely on Twitter, wasn't letting him write articles. And he wasn't an opposition figure. People are calling him a dissident. He wasn't a dissident. He supported Saudi Arabia. He supported the Saudi royal family. What he didn't like was MBS's autocracy, even by the standards of autocratic Saudi rulers. And he said it on my show. He said, look, I'm not calling for elections. I'm just saying, let me write some pieces. Let me be a journalist. Let people in Saudi Arabia say what they want to say, even if they're mildly critical. And it just goes to show how thin-skinned MBS is, that someone like Jamal Khashoggi, who is a member of the Saudi establishment, is not calling for elections, is just saying, let's have some better reforms. Let's all be part of this reform project that you claim to be leading. If even he's seen as a threat, and if even he's seen as someone who can be taken out, assassinated, extrajudicially killed, in a foreign country, what does that say about A, MBS, and how thin-skinned he is, how intolerant he is, and B, what does that say for Saudis around the world who want to be critical of their country? What does that say about journalists now? We live in a year, Amy, where journalists are being killed in astonishing numbers. A Bulgarian journalist brutally murdered and raped over the weekend, and that's why people need to say something about this. But, we know, Amy, you and I have discussed on this show, the Saudis get a pass, and MBS is now behaving like Colonel Gaddafi. And he'll still get a pass.
And, of course, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, very close to Jared Kushner, the son-in-law and senior advisor to President Trump. Has the White House said anything about what has happened right now to Jamal Khashoggi?
They're saying that they're following the story, which is their way of saying we don't really want to say anything. Trump and Kushner are very close to MBS. They backed him from the very beginning as he took out rival members of his family and took basically control of that kingdom. Trump was saying last week how much he loved the Saudi king. He just wanted them to pay more for their defense because they relied on the US. They're not going to say anything. Look, the Canadians, Amy, a few weeks ago put out a mild tweet criticizing the detention of women's rights activists in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis, who can't handle any criticism, went crazy and chucked out the Canadian ambassador, launched an online campaign attacking Canada. And where was the rest of the world? Where was the US when these two allies were having a row? They basically said, we're staying out of it. And I suspect if the Turkish government, who have their own problems with Saudi Arabia, escalate this matter and start making more public accusations about Saudi's role in the killing of a Saudi citizen on Turkish soil, then I suspect the Americans will try and stay out of it as well, because they don't want to upset the Saudis.
Last week, President Trump praised Saudi Arabia and its ruler, King Salman, but said the monarchy would quickly collapse without U.S. support. Trump was speaking Tuesday at a campaign rally in Mississippi.
We protect Saudi Arabia. Would you say they're rich? And I love the king, King Salman, but I said, King, we're protecting you. You might not be there for 2 weeks without us. You have to pay for your military. You have to pay.
So that was President Trump speaking Mississippi. I want to bring Medea Benjamin in, co-founder of Code Pink, author of Kingdom of the Unjust, behind the U.S.-Saudi connection. You also knew Jamal Khashoggi. Can you talk about what's happened to him and what's happening with the U.S.-Saudi relationship?
We don't know what happened to him, but if indeed it turns out that he was murdered inside the Saudi consulate, this has to be a turning point. He is somebody who worked in the United States, a resident of the United States, worked for the Washington Post. He is a well-known journalist, a mild critic, part of the loyal opposition. If they could do this to him, it's outrageous. And I think it has to be put in the context that the Saudi, Crown Prince MBS is out of control. What he is doing in Yemen, the bombing of school children, the kidnapping of Hariri in Lebanon, the throwing in prison of women activists, of scholars. He is creating a economic war with Qatar. He'd like to see the U.S. go to war with Iran. He is out of control. And at some point, we've got to break relations with Saudi. It's just all, so much of this is about weapons sales, and we've got to say that the weapons companies can't control our policy. I was heartened to see over the weekend some tweets, not just by people like Chris Murphy, who's been good on this issue, but also by Marco Rubio. We need our senators, our congresspeople to say enough is enough. If indeed this is true, there have to be severe consequences, sanctions against the Saudis, and it has to be the beginning of a break in our relationship with Saudi Arabia.
Reuters reported this morning Turkey's asked for permission to search Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul after the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi went missing last week. Jamal Khashoggi's fiance, his Turkish fiance, Hatice Cengiz, the reason he went into the embassy, accompanied him to the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. She waited for him outside until after midnight, returning on Wednesday morning. She tweeted Saturday she wouldn't believe anything until she receives a official confirmation writing, Jamal was not killed, and I do not believe he was killed. Now, the Turkish authorities say they see from closed circuit around, it's a very busy area, around the consulate, they see that he went in. They don't see him coming out, Medea.
Well, it certainly seems like he was killed inside the embassy. 15 people, the consulate, 15 people came in. The Turks know they flew in. They flew right out afterwards. They have footage of these 15 people. They have footage of the cars. They are going to be making statements very soon. We need to get the facts out. But I think after all of these days, we can recognize that the Saudis have brought in a hit team to get rid of a critic, again, a mild critic. And as Hassan Mehdi said, what does this mean to journalists? What does this mean to Saudis who are living in exile? What does this mean to Saudis who are living here in the United States? They are full of fear. I have friends here. They are afraid for their lives. So something has to be done to get at the truth, but also of something about accountability and U.S.-Saudi relations.
Mehdi Hassan, I wanted to ask you about Senator Murphy's tweet. Again, he says, if this is true, that the Saudis lured a U.S. resident into their consulate and murdered him, it should represent a fundamental break in our relationship with Saudi Arabia. Your final response also about what he last said to you.
Well, I'm glad Senator Murphy said that. I interviewed him recently in my podcast, and he wasn't willing to say that Saudi Arabia wasn't an ally in the way that Bernie Sanders has, for example. But I think, you know, the direction is shifting. Medea's right to mention Marco Rubio as well. But, you know, what are the liberals going to say? It's very easy to blame Trump. Where, you know, MBS came to America and was feted and met with Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post, met, you know, Zuckerberg and Bill Gates, and all these people were falling over to meet him. You know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Are any of them going to say anything now about this? I mean, my heart goes out to his fiance. Say it's horrible news. And when I last saw Jamal, we were joking in the green room at Al Jazeera about, you know, his personal security, MBS being in town. Did he feel safe? But here's a person who wrote in his columns for the Washington Post that, you know, I have a voice that people in Saudi Arabia don't have, and I'm going to use it. And he did, at great personal risk. He knew the risks, but I don't think even he thought this would happen last week when he went into the consulate. But, you know, if the Saudis have murdered a Washington Post columnist on foreign soil and the United States government and United States media stays quiet, I think that will be just astonishing.
Well, I want to thank you both for being with us to talk about this. The Washington Post, of course, also calling this an attack on journalism, demanding answers for their columnist. We will continue to follow the case of Jamal Khashoggi. Madia Benjamin and Mehdi Hassan, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, that's the complete Democracy Now. How about that? A journalist may be murdered by Saudi Arabia, a mild critic of Saudi Arabia. And where else is that being reported for 15 minutes? Where else can you hear an in-depth discussion of who this guy was? What do we know so far? And what are the implications? One of the implications is that the U.S. is trying to set the ground for war with Iran. And slowly, the Trump administration, every day there's something new. You hear a new attack on Iran. And remember who Iran's bitter enemy is in that part of the world, Saudi Arabia. Are we doing Saudi Arabia's bidding by threatening war with Iran? And is it in the U.S. interest? The U.S. is heavily supplying arms to Saudi Arabia as it's bombing Yemen, as Sean said. Hundreds of thousands of people in Yemen took to the streets last Friday to demonstrate against the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition because they're worried about famine. Famine has already struck Yemen. And now you've got Saudi Arabia bombing the port, bombing civilians in Yemen. Where do you hear that except on Democracy Now! And on WMNF? And is that part of the world about to explode? Will Saudi Arabia and Iran get into a full-blown war? They're already in a low-level war. And will the U.S. take sides and back Saudi Arabia? That's a huge question. It should be debated. It should be talked about. Our relationship with Saudi Arabia should be talked about. It's not. It's missing from ABC and NBC and CBS and NPR and Fox News and InfoWars and all these other places that you might get your news from. It's missing from all those places, except right here on Democracy Now! So please call us up. We have a challenge. We need 10 people to donate $100, and we will get an extra $1,000 donation. This is the most independent radio station in all of Florida. Thanks to Jim Macholtz from Bradenton. He made a $35 contribution. Jim, thanks for that nice contribution. He says Democracy Now! Is his favorite. Thanks to Anonymous, made a $50 contribution. Anonymous is in Tampa. Thank you. Likes all the public affairs programs and making a donation in honor of Eve. And Kathleen Oxhorn became the first one to match that $100 challenge. Kathleen made a $100 donation, and she says MNF News and public affairs is more crucial than ever.
Thank you.
So we need, Sean, we just need nine more people to donate $100, and we will get an extra $1,000 from that anonymous donor.
813-238-8001 is the number to call. If you can donate $100 for the great coverage you hear on Democracy Now!, the fantastic programming that Rob brings you on Radioactivity, we do need to hear from you. I don't see anyone on the line right now. That's really a shame because we do need support during this hour. 813-238-8001.
And Sean, we're going to hear Florida This Week right now, talking about the U.S. Senate race. But let's see if we can get one phone call right now at 813-238-8001. Remember, we need to hear from 10 people donating at least $100, $100 or more. And if we do that, if we get those 10 people, we've already had one already, if we get all 10, we will get an extra $1,000 from a generous donor who's out there listening right now. 813-238-8001. Let's hear Florida This Week, but we need to get mm-hmm. one person donating $100. Is there one person out there? I don't know. 813-238-8001. And remember, when the important issues come up, we don't just talk about the same issue day in and day out. We are not a one-note. This is not a one-note show. Democracy Now! Is not a one-note show. Sean's show is not a one-note show. There are huge issues, a whole range of issues out there, local, national, international, statewide. And we cover all those issues here, especially on Radioactivity. But we need one person to go to their phone at 813-238-8001. Here is one person, just went to their phone, made a $25 contribution, says MNF is a vital resource. Thanks for everything you do. That was an anonymous donation from Tampa. That's good. But we're going to need some more donations. 813-238-8001. 10 $100 contributions will get us an extra $1,000. Sean, let's hear Florida This Week. All right, this is WMNF Tampa. Coming up next, the U.S. Senate candidates hold their first debate. Billionaires are pouring money into the governor's race. Will an attack on one congressional candidate's wealth help his opponent? And we'll look at one of the most hotly contested state Senate races. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lauri.
Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Rita Ferrandino is the CEO and founder of ARK Capital and a Democrat. Dan Meduri is a commentator and host on AM 820 News. William Merlin is an attorney and a Republican. And Marlene Sokol is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Well, so glad to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, incumbent Democratic Senator Bill Nelson and Republican Governor Rick Scott tore into each other in their first debate in the U.S. Senate race. They argued over everything from guns to pollution to immigration to the Kavanaugh nomination. Here's a sample.
I hope, Governor, that you will look Fred Guttenberg in the face and tell him that you're not going to support those kind of policies that you have with the NRA.
For Fred's family, for all the families that lost their loved ones at Parkland, my heart goes out to them. I believe in the Second Amendment.
The testimony of Dr. Ford was quite compelling.
Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh are just pawns in some political game.
It was passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, bipartisan, and yet the House would never take it up.
We've got to have a secure borders. Our cities have to obey the law. And we've got to take care of the kids that didn't come here on their own. Their parents brought them. We've got to take care of the DACA kids.
Red tide is something that's naturally occurring. I've declared a state of emergency. We've sent millions down to our counties to help them. We have spent about $17 million through Moat Marine to do research. But that's totally separate is the algae problem. The algae problem is 100% tied to the fact that Senator Nelson does a campaign ad in 1990s that he's going to deal with the algae, and now how many years later, he has never done anything to give us the money to fix the dike at Lake Okeechobee, which is a 100% federal project.
What about the environment? He has systematically, in his 8 years as governor, systematically disassembled the environmental agencies of this state.
The polls show the candidates are just about tied, and voting by mail has begun. The next debate is scheduled for 10 p.m. on October 16th on CNN. So, Chip, do you think either one of those candidates landed any blows or plowed any new ground in that debate?
Well, they were certainly doing a lot of blows for guys that aren't that charismatic at each other. And I really don't think that it really is going to matter that debate, you know, as people start to go to the polls right now. The truth of the matter is that the Republicans seem to have caught up somewhat because it's energized a lot of the Republican base with the Kavanaugh, you know, hearings, and everybody's going to go there. I had some discussion with my panelists before we start, but a lot of my Republican friends will vote right down the Republican ballot if they show up, and I expect that they will. The anger they get about how they perceive that Kavanaugh has been mistreated, I think that you'll find a lot more Republicans show up as a result of that, much more so than whatever happened on this debate.
But now that the Kavanaugh nomination appears to be going through, Governor Scott says he would support Kavanaugh. Now that it's going through, do the Republicans are they motivated to come out to vote in November?
Well, that's interesting that you go 3 weeks and you were talking about something else with Donald Trump, and then we're talking about Kavanaugh this week, and I don't know what we'll be talking about 2 weeks and 3 weeks from now, and that's as fickle as it gets. But when you have a really close race, I think sometimes who's going to get out the vote means an awful lot at the very end, and that's going to be close right now. We talk about various people coming from, even Puerto Ricans who are now registering to vote here, and the impact of what they felt having to come to the state of Florida as a result of what happened in their state, maybe even having some small impact, but enough to could even change the vote here.
I want to be sure to ask you about Puerto Rico when we come around to you again. But Rita, what do you think about the debate? Well, do you think that it was clear that Scott or Nelson landed any blows?
So what I want to go back to is that I have many Republican female friends. Not one of them came out of this whole Kavanaugh situation in favor of Kavanaugh. And so although I think Republicans will vote. I'm not sure that Republican women are with the Republican Party this round. Mm-hmm. And I think the debate was a wonderful chance for people to see Rick Scott is a media machine. He's very calculated. He's got a lot of ads. And when you see him without all of the TV magic, you know, he's a little duller than dirt. And
well, but I think the Rick Scott campaign has been implying both at this debate and then with the press releases, they're implying they think that Bill Nelson is too old for the job, that he's not showing up. Do you think that that is scoring any points with voters, or will voters see that as ageist, that you know, Nelson is like practically any other senior citizen here in Florida?
Well, I don't think they'll see it as ageist, but I do think that they've even taken it even further than that. They've started to comment and call him confused on multiple occasions, implementing that his mind has left him, that maybe he's suffering from the early onsets of dementia. The fact of the matter is, though, is that when you look at both of them, and that 45-second clip was just, well, it was tough to watch, tough to listen to. I mean, being subjected to the actual debate, which was over an hour, it was like watching an hour-long fatal car crash. It was so boring. It was so awful.
I'm with you.
Saw this take place.
I
don't know how much debates actually matter now. In the age in which we consume media and the age in which these guys are spending money, this Senate race is already over $200 million. We're 4 weeks away from the election. And I think people are going to make up their minds consuming media, consuming ads, listening to their friends. And I don't know debates really matter anymore.
Yes. Marlene, do you think the governor has to show some empathy and some warmth? And do you think that the governor, that Bill Nelson needs to show that he's on top of it and he's present and his mind is sharp?
You know, I think people, as with everything else, are going to vote their party. And I wish I could say we lived in a world where being ageist would be a problem, where Governor Scott would lose points for being ageist. But I think the way things are now and the way, you know, bullying is accepted, you know, meanness is accepted, it's a show of strength. I don't think it's really going to matter one way or another. And I think that Democrats, you know, will be loyal to their party and they will vote for Nelson, and it doesn't matter, you know, any more than it matters that Scott is being ageist and being a bully.
But with most voters, many of the voters in Florida being senior citizens, will they be riled up if anybody questions Bill Nelson's mental capacity?
Again, I wish that were the case. I don't think so. We're in that climate.
Chip, I got to ask you, you've spent a lot of time recently in Puerto Rico. There's a lot of questions about Puerto Rico because many people of Puerto Rican descent live here in the state of Florida. I think this election is largely about Trump. I think when voters go to the polls, if they like Trump, they're gonna vote Republican. If they don't like Trump, they're gonna vote Democrat. You've been to Puerto Rico a lot. Do you think the people of Puerto Rico have thoughts about President Trump based on what you've seen on the ground in Puerto Rico?
Absolutely. Anybody who gets demeaned, and I think that's the way that most Puerto Ricans believe that they were treated by Donald Trump with the rhetoric, means an awful lot. And there is a definite the president sentiment as a result of that. There's a lot of frustration because, and I don't know if it's whose fault it is, it's very difficult. The FEMA money that's been appropriated by the Republican Congress, there's a lot of money there, but it is not getting out to the Puerto Ricans right now. A lot of that's because the government itself is broke, and it's taking a lot of time. The insurance issues are just ongoing. And somebody talked about those statistics that came out. Depending on which way you look at it, I was driving home at 1 o'clock from our law office in Puerto Rico, and there was about half the traffic lights that were out. And I thought, if we got hit and I got killed, I might be adding to that statistic.
And this is just a few days ago.
Oh, yeah, this is last week. Yeah. So it's, yeah, we're a long way in Puerto Rico from getting rebuilt. And that's the truth. And I think people are very frustrated as a result of that. And there is a perception that there is not leadership from Washington, D.C., who oversees Puerto Rico.
But do they blame their own government? Do they blame the government on the island or in places like San Juan?
I heard this week that there's three sports in Puerto Rico: baseball, basketball, and politics. And, of course, people always blame their government when things aren't working. There is a perception because of the, I think, the demeaning nature that many Puerto Ricans do blame Washington, D.C. for one reason or another for their problems right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do you think there's going to be an outcome then, hurting the Republicans here in Florida based on what's gone on?
It doesn't help, but I'll say this. If you have a family of five that come over from Puerto Rico, only one or two can register to vote. The other three are children, and so I caution some of my Democratic friends from hoping for too much, you know, from that. And but there has been a push for people to be able to vote here in the states, and for a senator and congressman that they don't have a right to do in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. And not to mention, though, the village's population has outpaced the population from Puerto Ricans that have moved to central Florida. And this goes back to show you about Trump's unforced errors, too, where if he just would have stayed out of it, didn't do the, you know, the famous presser, did not question the death toll, his administration could have muddied up the entire issue, blamed FEMA over and over again, and he would have walked away with it with no problems whatsoever.
And even more than that, they could have blamed the Puerto Rican government, who got itself in bankruptcy well before the storm came through, but instead he had to say something, and the perception because of what the president said is very different as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, liberal billionaires George Soros and Tom Steyer have given at least $2.5 million so far to help Florida Democratic gubernatorial nominee Andrew Gillum, while groups linked to the conservative Koch brothers, they're stepping up assistance to Republican nominee Ron DeSantis. According to the Palm Beach Post, the Koch-affiliated Concerned Veterans for America Action says it will spend at least $100,000 on mailers supporting DeSantis. DeSantis has many other billionaire backers, including Sheldon Adelson, Foster Freese, and Rebecca Mercer. The question is, will they give as much as Soros and Steyer? So, Dan, do you think that the public, the fact that Steyer and Soros are involved in this election, and that the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and others are involved, does that impact the way the public perceives the candidates?
I don't know if it impacts the way the public perceives the candidates, because I would venture to say that most people, other than the Koch brothers and George Soros, most people have no idea who those other billionaires are. I will say that I have been surprised by the Republican Ron DeSantis and his campaign. One, he hasn't hit Andrew Gillum really at all in the FBI investigation. Two, George Soros is the ultimate Republican boogeyman when it comes to politics, and he has been basically self-funding Andrew Gillum's campaign since the beginning. They have a 15-year pre-existing relationship. You wonder what's taking Republicans so long to just pound that message of George Soros back, George Soros back, George Soros back. I'm confused there.
So, Rita, what do you think? Do you think the public is paying attention to the billionaires behind the candidates?
I don't think they're paying any attention at all. And I do think that Andrew Gillum won the primary because of his grassroots door-to-door knocking. And I think that you also can see with Gillum, he's got many small donations. So I think that the governor's race is really going to come down to, you've got a very dynamic, well-liked Andrew Gillum, and you've got DeSantis, who is just not that good in front of people, and will be interested to see how he can rally support. I think that it's going to be fun to watch.
One of the things that Steyer is doing is signing up young people to vote. Will they come out to vote?
Of course they will.
No, do you really believe that?
Well, look who came out to vote for Andrew Gillum and got him across the finish line. It was the young people.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I have a 19-year-old, and his vote-by-mail ballot is sitting there ready to get returned.
Okay. Well, Chip, what do you think? I mean, do you think that let's say, for instance, the Steyer question, will young people come out to vote in this race? Steyer is sending people around the state, a really good ground game, signing people up, registering people to vote.
Yeah, they might. Traditionally, they have not. And that's just traditionally. You never know. Things change. And
what
that's
would
just
they do
the way
in presidential years?
That's the way, you know, politics is. But this is not a presidential year. We'll see how it works out in the state. The truth is that there's a lot of money being spent on television right now, an amazing amount of money in this particular race because of the billionaires, and it impacts the other candidates as well, too, because they're having to go to grassroots get-out-the-vote campaigns because they can't even find slots to purchase for television advertising because it's all bought up by the governor's race and the Senate race. So to say that the billionaires aren't affecting racism politics, it really is affecting racism politics.
I just, hearing you say that, what it does remind me, this does feel like a presidential year, and it may be because of all of this big billionaire money coming in. It does not feel like a governor's year. It feels like a definite presidential year to me.
Well, that was Rita Ferrandino, the Democrat, on that panel. Chip Merlin was the Republican. Dan Maduri and Marlene Sokol were the journalists. Dan is on the radio, and Marlene writes for the Tampa Bay Times. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. That was Florida This Week. We have a huge goal as we try to raise $10,000 between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. this afternoon.
Thanks to Jim Witten from Lakeland, who just made a donation of $200. He listens all day, loves the station, wants to give this time to Democracy Now. Jim, thank you for that nice contribution. Julie Gabrielski from Brooksville made a $10 a month Circle of Friends donation. She's going to donate $120 to WMNF, likes Democracy Now and all the public affairs. There are two donations that are helping us get that $1,000 match. If we have 10 donations of $100 or more during the public affairs right now or in the beginning of the next hour, we will get an extra $1,000. So that's three people who have matched the $1,000 challenge. Let's see if we can get one more person donating at least $100. If you donate $100 or more, an anonymous donor in St. Pete will double your $100 pledge. 813-238-8001.
Yeah, we really need to hear from you. Do you like the discussion that Rob brings every Monday with the Florida This Week? It's a great panel of experts talking about the hot topics in Florida. If that's important to you, give us a call now, 813-238-8001, or you could be supporting Rob's radioactivity interviews that he does the rest of the week, or, of course, Democracy Now!, which we played at the beginning of the show. If any of these shows is important to you, we do need to hear from you, 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org. I'd also like to thank this donation from Beth Whittinghall from St. Petersburg. $100 contribution is from Bruce in memory of Eve. So thank you for that contribution. Also, Sink and Sons Roofing in St. Petersburg is getting the Last Local Radio t-shirt in memory of Eve, contributing $200. So thank you for those generous donations. So that's two more people that have donated at least $100, right, Rob?
That's right. So we need, Sean, we only need five more people donating $100 or more, and we'll get an extra $1,000 from one of our listeners who's challenged listeners to say, look, if 10 people can donate $100 or more, I will give WMNF $1,000. So there's a challenge on the table. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes to the NPR news. Right after that, Sean will be here with the Midpoint program. We're trying to raise a lot of money today, almost $10,000 from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. That's our goal. I'm not sure where we're at. We'll give you an update after the NPR news. So stick around. But please call us up at 813-238-8001. We still have the Pacifica flash drive. This is the Voices That Changed the World. This is a flash drive that, believe it or not, has 1,300 hours of interviews and programs from the Pacifica Radio Archives. The first community radio station in the country, in fact, the first public radio station in the country, was KPFA in Berkeley, California in 1949. It was the first listener-sponsored radio station. And this flash drive includes interviews and speeches with Gore Vidal, Jessica Mitford, Dylan Thomas, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, Langston Hughes, Bernardo Bertolucci, the filmmaker, Murray Bookchin, the anarchist, Lena Horne, the great jazz singer, Elsa Knight Thompson, and many others, and has 1,300 hours. It's impossible to do justice in just 30 seconds trying to explain what's on this flash drive. You may have heard us describe it before, but it includes books on tape, it includes plays, it includes interviews with people like Joan Baez and Mario Savo, and Toni Morrison, Ed Asner, Gary Snyder, the poet, Judy Chicago, Jerry Stiller is on this, the comedian, Phil Oakes, many, many others. And you can get this Pacifica flash drive for $180, 1,300 hours of the best programs from Pacifica's long and storied history. Sean, we need to get at least one more person donating $100. And if we get that person, I think that will mean that we're just four calls away from getting the $1,000 match. And I'm going to have to turn the match over to you if we don't get those five calls in the next hour.
That's right. We'd like to get them
next 2 minutes, right?
Exactly. But we'd like to get them now. We will be able to take them next hour as well. But we do need to hear from you right now. 813-238-8001. In the next hour, we're going to hear a little bit of information from that Pacifica Radio's Voices That Changed the World flash drive. I'm going to play a John Lennon interview, and I'm going to play some live Bob Dylan, never before heard, never unreleased Bob Dylan live in the studio, and some other things. 813-238-8001. If you support Radioactivity, you can get a copy of that thumb drive for a $180 contribution to WMNF. We also would need to hear from you. If you want to go to the website, you can donate at WMNF.org. or on the smartphone app at the hit the tip jar button at the WMNF smartphone app.
And here is an anonymous donation of $100. Loves all the shows from Amy Goodman through executive session. Learns so much every day. She is making a $100 contribution. Thank you, Anonymous, for that nice contribution. Sean, we only need four more $100 contributions, and we'll get an extra $1,000 to help the news and public affairs on WMNF. So if you love the unique news and public affairs on WMNF, programs like Radioactivity, like Sustainable Living, like Midpoint, if you like Radioactivity, Democracy Now!, please call us up. If you like Richard Wolf, call us at 813-238-8001. Your donation keeps us strong and independent. Sean, just 12 seconds to the news.
All right, we have a $210 contribution.
Oh, so Sean, we know I need three more donations of $100.
Getting tickets to the Uke It Out at Cage Brewery. This is Ramil Matukas in Clearwater. This is WMNF Tampa.
Live.